Hi, boys and girls. Like you, Santa is listening to the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com. Oh, 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 oh,
oh. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock.
Hello and welcome to the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com. My name is Jeff Westover, founder, host, and head mistletoe schlepper at the Merry Forums of My Merry Christmas, where we have been making merry online since 1991. At the time of the recording of this podcast, the world is observing the 75th anniversary of D-Day, which was, of course, the 6th day of June, 1944. The many celebrations and remembrances of D-Day have brought to my mind just what a special time the 1940s were to Christmas. Some of the greatest and most iconic elements of the secular Christmas came out of the 1940s, from White Christmas to Rudolph to It's a Wonderful Life to Miracle on 34th Street to so much more, and indeed could be said that the 1940s were a golden age for Christmas. In this merry episode, we want to discuss that. This episode is not so much about the stuff such as White Christmas or I'll Be Home for Christmas or movies like The Bishop's Wife, but rather we want to discuss why that great explosion of Christmas happened in the 1940s. I believe there are many reasons, but none was greater than the Second World War. Just after D-Day, a letter from my grandfather, who as a 24-year-old GI serving in Europe, said what nearly everyone was saying in June of 1944. He wrote, "The general consensus of hopes here around is that perhaps we may be home to celebrate Christmas this year, and who knows? We live on those hopes, believe me." Now, my grandfather's role in the war was a little different. He was a codebreaker. He served in the 3rd Radio Squadron Mobile of the 9th Army, Detachment A, they were called. The job of his outfit was to intercept German radio dispatches and to interpret them and send them up the line to those in command so they would know what they learned. He was not there at Normandy on D-Day. He was in England, and it would be weeks before his squadron moved to the front in France. But moved to the front they did, and my grandfather served there to the end of the war before he died. When he wrote that letter in June of 1944, he had no idea of knowing that he had just one Christmas left. Now, of course, they didn't really know if they would be home by Christmas that year, and it turns out that they weren't. But that hope, that expectation that they could be home was quite nearly universal. I think it's important to talk about that. If you look at the war years, you see Christmas as kind of a bellwether for most people, a target on the calendar year to shoot for, a milestone for marking the passage of time. In my pursuit of family history from that time period, and I have read a lot of letters from folks beyond the grandfather I never knew, I learned that Christmas was a marker. The letters would say, "I've missed 3 Christmases now from home," or "only one more Christmas until I can come home." Not surprisingly, each passing Christmas of the early 1940s brought something new that wasn't part of Christmas before. And I'm not just talking about songs and movies. I'm talking about the actual celebration of Christmas that was so different from what anyone knew. I think it's important to talk about the world at war in the early 1940s, not only because it had such a personal impact on millions of people like my grandfather, but also because it had such a tremendous impact on Christmas. Christmas in the 1930s is a story unto itself. It was completely different than in the decades both ahead and behind. The Roaring Twenties were a time of Christmas excess, and yet the 1930s were a time when the Great Depression dominated and Christmas was celebrated no matter what, even if there was no money. In fact, Christmas of the 1930s culturally took a step back in time and focused more on children. Now think about that. In fact, for those members of your family who are still around, you might want to talk about that. Technology that dominated was radio and recordings for those who could afford it. During the Depression, people did without a lot of things. Some did, you know, they didn't fix up their cars if they had them at all. Some struggled so much that they didn't even keep their telephones. But the one thing they kept buying during the 1930s was the radio. They were relatively cheap to get, and the radio gave countless hours of free entertainment. Big hits of Christmas in the 1930s included Santa Claus is Coming to Town and Winter Wonderland, songs that were introduced and made famous through radio programs. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was a runaway hit of 1939 as a children's book, but not as a song. In fact, both in tradition and in culture, Christmas was really all about the kids in the 1930s. The biggest movie star was Shirley Temple, and the hottest Christmas toy was the Shirley Temple doll. World War II officially began when Germany invaded Poland in September of 1939. However, the war drums beat with Hitler rising to power all throughout the 1930s. France and Great Britain declared war after Poland was invaded, and countries all over the world then began to stake out positions as it related to the war, including the United States. The USA, who had yet to emerge from the Great Depression, well, we weren't having any of it. Opinion polls, driven by the not-too-distant memory of about 20 years earlier with World War I, clearly showed that America was going to sit this one out. President Roosevelt, in his Christmas speech of 1939, made that abundantly clear.
At this time, let us hope that the boon of peace, which we in this country and in the whole Western Hemisphere enjoy, under the providence of God, may likewise be vouchsafed to all nations and all peoples. We desire peace. We shall work for peace. We covet neither the lands nor the possessions of any other nation or peoples on earth.
As we would later learn, it was impossible for America to stay out of it. Christmas of 1940 should have been a warning, because it was very different on both sides of the Atlantic. What Great Britain experienced in 1940 would become real enough to America later. But with this report from an American reporter, Edward R. Murrow, the world learned a sobering reality about Christmas during war.
This afternoon, as the stores were closing, as shoppers and office workers were hurrying home, one heard such phrases as, "So long, Mamie," and "Good luck, Jack," but never a Merry Christmas. It can't be a Merry Christmas. For those people who spend tonight and tomorrow by their firesides in their own homes realize that they have fought this Christmas with their nerve, their bodies, and their old buildings. Their nerve is unshaken. The casualties have not been large. And there are many old buildings still untouched. Tonight, there are a few Christmas parties in London, a few expensive dinners at famous hotels, but there are no fancy paper hats and no firecrackers.
But for America in 1940, it was Christmas as usual. That is to say, it was Christmas exactly as it was in the 1930s. The biggest hit was actually from the year before, in 1939, and the focus was still on the kids.
Mr. Kringle, ting-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling.
As America sat out the war, it listened to Jack Benny and the same old jokes about Christmas time on the radio.
You know, a funny thing about women, Don, all year long they're so helpless. You have to open the door for them. They can't light their own cigarettes. They cling to your arm as you walk down the street. They're as delicate as butterflies. And then, about 2 weeks before Christmas, a mad glint comes into their eyes. And with an umbrella for gouging and a handbag for slugging, off they go. Come on, girls, let's mangle the mail.
Despite America's hesitation to head to war, there was no doubt to many that the winds of change were blowing, and nowhere was that reflected more than in popular music associated with Christmas after 1940. In an odd twist, in a decade that brought so much Christmas to the table, there was no new popular Christmas music that came out in the year 1940. Now think about that. The 1930s brought us Winter Wonderland, Santa Claus is Coming to Town, and even the first big Bing Crosby hit, A Christmas in Silent Night. Every year featured something new and something big, but not in 1940. Christmas seemed all but suspended in popular music and movies. Nothing really happened until this in December of 1941.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
America was in shock. For those of us who remember September 11th, 2001, the day of December 7th, 1941 was no less shocking and no less earth-shattering. Just weeks after Roosevelt's declaration of war, Winston Churchill visited the White House on Christmas Eve and shared these thoughts about war and Christmas.
Fellow workers, fellow soldiers in the cause, this is a strange Christmas Eve. Almost the whole world is locked in deadly struggle. Armed with the most terrible weapons which science can devise, the nations advance upon each other. Ill would it be for us this Christmas tide if we were not sure that no greed for the lands or wealth of any other people, no vulgar ambition, no morbid lust for material gain at the expense of others, had led us to the field. Ill would it be for us if that were so. Here in the midst of war, raging and roaring over all the lands and seas, creeping nearer to our hearths and homes, here amid all these tumults, we have tonight the peace of the spirit in each cottage home and in every generous heart.
And with that, America mobilized. Lives across the continent began to change. I use my family in this instance only as an example. There was nothing different of my family during these times. Everyone, it seemed, was caught up in the cause. For my father's parents, who were new parents for the first time during these years, their work took them not to war, but nevertheless a part of the war not many wanted a part of. In 1942, they moved to a dusty outpost in Topaz, Utah, where the three of them, my grandpa, my grandma, and my father, took up life in a Japanese relocation center. My grandparents served there for 2 years as school teachers, an unpopular choice in an inhospitable place among people who had done absolutely no wrong. Then, when all that was over, my grandfather left for more than a year to work in post-war recovery for UNRWA. His siblings, all of his brothers, enlisted, covering every branch of the service. One brother was already in the Navy and serving at Pearl Harbor when the Japanese attacked. On my mother's side, my grandfather, the man I talked about at the top of the podcast, enlisted less than a month after my mother was born. Both of his brothers served as well. His sisters all worked in war-related industries, and one literally was a riveter in an airplane factory. Just for good measure, I took a look at my wife's family, and they too had generations aged 18 to 35 who all were enlisted or drafted or otherwise served for the war. And that's just the way that it was. Families were larger in those days, and everyone seemed to be affected by the war in some way. Families were separated, taken from home, and they put lives on the line for the cause. When it came to Christmas 1942, everything was so very, very different than just the year before. That's why when White Christmas was released in July 1942 as part of the marketing for the film Holiday Inn, the song went on to shock the world. By October 1942, the song was already topping the charts, and it stayed there for months. What Christmas song has ever done that? What song of any kind has ever done that? White Christmas was not just a Christmas song, it was an anthem for a generation. It spoke to their hearts and said all that they were feeling, especially to those who were spending this, their first Christmas away from home, and many feeling like they may never return. The years of 1942 and 1943 were years of building the American war machine. The headlines of 1944, and especially the events of June 1944 with D-Day, were all built as both man and machine were made battle ready. By Christmas 1943, my grandfather was already in England and training with the 951st Signal Radio Corps. He wrote, quote, "Christmas is not white over here. In fact, it is wet and mucky, but still no snow. It just doesn't seem like Christmas at all. Most of our boys are making every attempt at trying to have a jolly good time, but it is so evident that each and every one of them has his mind back there with his sweetheart, his wife, his mom, his dad, and God knows what else and who else. Looking around, you see the fellows sitting in solemnity and deep thought. They too, going through the barracks, you can see them laying there with their eyes feeling upward and feeling for God knows what. And yet one immediately gains the impression of what his truest thoughts are. Upon inquiry, any one of them, you would get some such remark as, you know darn well what I'm thinking of. You know darn well I'd give half my life to be back in the States just now. Yes, that is the strain which persists here today." No doubt the big Christmas hit of 1943 was heard by my grandfather and all those GIs he described. Like the year before, this song came out in October of 1943 and became for the second year in a row another huge hit for Christmas.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can count on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents on the tree. Christmas Eve will find me where the love light gleams. I'll be home for Christmas, if only in my
It must never be forgotten that this was a world war. Not only were the fighting soldiers of the Allied forces the ones experiencing a different Christmas or Christmas away from home, but everybody at home was having a different Christmas. Christmas was not the same for anyone. And what follows in this story told by my grandmother more than 30 years ago, we learn what Christmas was like for Japanese children in a relocation center, and the lessons she learned about Christmas from the children she taught in school there.
As the Christmas season came near, I vowed that I was going to do everything in my power to help them have a pleasant holiday. Now, I was well aware that not everyone in my class were Christians. We had a goodly number who were Buddhist. So we discussed things first and talked about what we should do. Those who were Buddhist felt that all of the things that we had planned would be applicable to their religion and would not in any way not harmonize. So we began to decorate our room to make the little presents for our family. And then when it was announced that there would be a community Christmas program and they would like some of the students to participate, we volunteered to do a version of Dickens' Christmas Carol. They worked very hard and they were truly outstanding. It could not have helped but raise their self-esteem when they received a standing ovation. After the program, there were treats and a sort of a party. Then we retired to our room, and there I had accumulated some little gifts for them. I bought a hard-bound copy of The Life of George Washington, and each child received one. It would be astounding, I'm sure, if we knew just how many places there that this was the only book that they possessed. And yet they were hungry to read and to study, so it was well received. When I went home that day, I felt very good and felt like it had been a success, little knowing that the best was yet to come. I had scarcely arrived home when there came a knock at the door, and there stood one of the little boys from my class, smiling broadly. He reached out his hand to me, and in it was a gallon bucket with some water and three minnows. It was very evident that he was giving me his treasured gift, and my first impulse was to say, "Oh, do keep it. You like this so much better than I do." But fortunately, I didn't yield to that temptation. Instead, I said, "How do you take care of them? What do you do to keep them in good condition?" And he again seemed to enjoy telling the teacher what to do. As he left, a little girl came up the walk, and she was bringing a beautiful Christmas card. She had exquisite artwork on it, almost perfect printing, and a message of love. It was very easy to accept that gift. As she left, there yet came another little boy. He was carrying a small box of crackers that he thought my baby could use. And I was just almost in amazement when next up the walk was our tall, shy Tsuneo Sato. At first, there was nothing apparent, and I knew that he had no money and little with which he could get a gift, and yet he looked different somehow. And as he came close, he handed me his ID card. Now, he had been drilled, as the other children had, that this was a very important thing. They must not lose it. They should have it at all times. And so, feeling that was the only thing he had of importance, he gave it to me, and I accepted. Although it was hard to keep back the tears, I knew that I could go to the office and get a new one for him. I still have that card. Well, that's when I learned that receiving can be very precious, and I will never forget the experiences of that day.
What everyone knew at Christmas 1943 was that the year 1944 would be very different. By then, all the world knew the serious business of the war was about to explode. The Allied response was waiting for both Germany and Japan, and 1944 was the year when it would have to happen. When the Allies stormed the beach at Normandy and the war dragged on over the summer as France was liberated, it became clear that maybe it wouldn't be over by Christmas 1944 after all. With each passing month, it became clear that Christmas 1944 would be yet another different Christmas, another Christmas away from home, another Christmas without loved ones there. And this time, it would be the most difficult Christmas of all.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year all our troubles will be out of sight. Yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. Next year all our troubles will be miles away. Once again, as in old.
For the third year in a row, a very adult, a very poignant, and a very timely Song of Christmas rose to the top of the charts. Nothing like that had happened in the history of Christmas music before, and nothing has happened like that since. Christmas music during these three critical years gave voice to a generation for all that they were experiencing in a world at war, in a world in change. It was a Christmas never to be forgotten on the front lines for my grandfather, now a part of the elite 3rd Radio Squadron Mobile Detachment A. The weeks leading up to the Battle of the Bulge turned the fortunes of the war, and his unit played such a critical part that much of their activity remains classified to this day. But as the battle gave way and the Allied forces pushed into Germany in the winter of 1944, it was clear that the war was coming to a close. VE Day happened in May, and VJ Day happened in August. It was time now for everyone to start making their way home. Christmas 1945 has been declared as the most celebrated Christmas ever. President Truman set precedents when he gave a 4-day weekend to federal workers, and the Army and the Navy engaged in Operation Magic Carpet, a program designed to discharge tens of thousands of servicemen and women. Operation Santa Claus was launched using planes, trains, ships, or anything else that moved to help as many as possible to get home for Christmas. December of 1945 provided some of the most epic traffic jams in history, especially in big cities that feature travel hubs for airlines and train stations. The national highway system was an advent of the 1950s, ironically under the great general of World War II, now President Eisenhower. So the National Guard then was called out to direct traffic on the crowded back roads of America. In America, as well as in other parts of the world, 4 dark years were put in the past as Christmas trees were lit up in town squares and even in homes for the first time in many, many years. In Europe and in America, the rush to worship in churches was unprecedented, as thankful people everywhere rejoiced over the end of the war and the rush of loved ones home. There were shortages of everything everywhere. The American manufacturing machine had not had time to shift from war to peace, and even the basics of bread, flour, butter, and meat were hard to find. None of that, however, seemed to matter. If there was one song that summed it up in 1945, it was this number one hit of Christmas by Vaughn Monroe.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful, and since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping, and I've bought some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
From that point forward, Christmas was different, and it was more grandly celebrated than ever. Very quickly, in the years after the war in the 1940s, the world was given It's a Wonderful Life, Miracle on 34th Street, The Bishop's Wife, and songs such as The Christmas Song, Here Comes Santa Claus, and Sleigh Ride. In fact, the baby boom years of 1946 to 1960 remain the most inventive and explosive period in the cultural celebration of Christmas. Christmas was just entirely different. For people, everything else was entirely different, too. For my mother, whose father died in the war, and for his Minnesota family, the world had changed entirely, affecting generations of folks. For my father and his parents, they left the dusty, remote west deserts of Utah for California, where their baby boom children would be born and take root. Every family was affected in ways like this. Children were born, careers were launched, and a new way of American living and European recovery commenced. I would encourage you to explore this theme with your older family members this Christmas before it's too late. I guarantee you, you will hear stories unlike the stories of Christmas of our own from those who lived and survived during those years of the early 1940s. Join us at the Merry Forums of My Merry Christmas, where we discuss this and other topics of Christmas all year round. For MyMerryChristmas.com and the Merry Podcast, this is Jeff Westover wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas.